It was a good day when the computers went away from determining who was going to play for a college football national championship, or at least I thought so, until this past season, where the four-team college football playoff has revealed itself to be an absolute travesty. Kill it. End it. Get rid of it and find another way. Ken Lavica, Brian Rowitz here from the roofclaim.com Boca Raton Bowl FAU Stadium. Glorious, glorious Tuesday. And we are in Boca on ESPN 106.3, free ESPN app, and on your smart speaker. Hey, Alexa, hey, Siri, hey, Google Play, ESPN 106.3. The roofclaim.com Boca Raton Bowl comes up 7 o'clock tonight here on ESPN 106.3. BYU, number 16 in the nation, taking on UCF. The four-team college football playoff, McLovin, is an absolute disaster. There is no other way to put it now, and it has really shown itself to be fraudulent. And over the last couple of days, after we got Alabama and Notre Dame, Clemson and Ohio State, a result four teams that meant the championship Saturday was completely meaningless. There was no point to it. They didn't have to play anything. It was predetermined, it appears, who was going in. The question has been, oh, does this work? Is this working? Well, yeah, it's working, because from a TV rating standpoint, you're automatically this year putting in the four teams that are going to draw the most TV ratings, the most eyeballs. That's going to help you financially. Is it determining who the best college football team is? Absolutely not. I was big on the playoff, and I thought that this was going to be a significantly better way post-BCS to come up with a champion. Ooh, how exciting, two semifinals, and it leads to a title game. That's going to be great. But we have found a way, much like college football always tends to do, to absolutely tarnish something to the point of it no longer serving any sort of viable function. I am all for just killing off the four-team college football playoff, and at this point, I'm fine going back to the computers.
But why did this year change anything? Like, we've always known this. We've always known the SEC gets a little bit biased. Like, it's the same, you know, six teams you're choosing from every year. I don't get the reaction this year to, like, all of a sudden it's like, oh, this isn't working. It's never worked.
This is why, though. This is the year that you could have made a case for it to work. When you have Cincinnati undefeated at 9-0, and they finish 8th in the college football playoff rankings behind a 3-loss team in Florida. They ended up behind Florida, who lost 3 games this year. Coastal Carolina, we made a big deal about BYU traveling to Myrtle Beach and playing Coastal 3 Saturdays ago. And oh, there you go. This could be what puts a Group of 5 team over the top. It's a message sending game. It ended up not sending any message at all.
Right.
Coastal Carolina finished 12th in the college football playoff rankings. There has been no other year in which you can make a better case because of the uneven number of games and playing only games within a conference where a Group of 5 could have made a viable case to get into the playoff, and it didn't even come close. And that is where it really reveals itself to be a sham, because college football is truly now the only sport in North America where not every team actually has a chance to win a national championship.
Yeah, I think coming into this year, the one thing that might have happened was the Power Five finally realized, hey, we don't actually need the NCAA. We don't actually need these Group of Five teams. And they break off and do their own thing, and they sort of see that light. And I think we're going down that way. Like, the Group of Five, you're right. They have nothing to gain unless there's an 8-team playoff where you're guaranteeing them one spot, and they only would get one spot. There's nothing for them to gain, and it's just where we are right now. But I don't think this year changed any of it. I think the one thing, I believe it was USA Today wrote a few weeks ago, saying, hey, it would be awesome if what we saw with Coastal and BYU, that week of game, the big mid-major game, we saw more of that in season. But that's never going to happen either. And as you become a Group of Five team that is relevant, you don't get to play the big boys anymore. And because you don't play the big boys, you then don't have the resume to say, oh, we should be playing with them in the playoffs. Like, that's just how the system is.
Should college football's four-team playoff be killed? 888-760-3776. 888-760-ESPN. Tweeted us at ESPN West Palm. I'm Ken Lavica. He's Brian McLovin-Rowitz here until 3, leading you in to Josh Cohen and the home team. Should the college football playoff be killed? This was the year that you could have bucked the trend. You have, McLovin, had in 28 all-time college football playoff games, semifinals and title games combined, only 11 different teams
right,
playing these games all-time. There is zero parity. We know that. There are levels to FBS as we know it. And what you brought up just a couple of moments ago is 100% right. The more successful you are as a group of five team, the less opportunities you get to play the big boys. Right. So Jimbo in Birmingham can sit there and say, oh, well, go play somebody. You can't replace Auburn. But in reality, that is not even possible. And I think that's evidenced perfectly locally by what Florida tried to pull with UCF, where UCF was trying to get Florida to come down to Orlando and then go back to Gainesville for a simple home-and-home. And Florida wouldn't do it because they feel that they're better than a school like UCF. They feel that they're more privileged than a school like UCF. So it's not going to happen. When Gary Barta, the chair of the College Football Playoff Committee, tells The Athletic, yeah, I think a group of five could eventually get into the College Football Playoff. He's full of crap. And it's so easy to say that and just lie about it because anybody right. with a brain knows the reality that that's not the case. This is, to me, this is not an argument about whether Texas A&M should be in. Right. And you know, as a Florida State fan, no one likes to complain more than Jimbo Fisher yep. about really everything. You could give him a list unprompted and he'd find a way to complain about it. This is not a discussion about what would have happened if Florida beat Alabama in the SEC championship. This is not a discussion about whether or not Notre Dame is a fraud or not, and they are, for the record. But this is a discussion about whether or not every team in college football at the FBS level has a chance to win a championship, and the answer to that is an unequivocal no, which leads me to either A, completely abolishing the four-team playoff, or B, you break off the group of five from the Power Five and you create its own separate division, because this is not working. And when it comes down to outweighing TV ratings greater than who actually deserves, who's actually put together a resume to play in the championship, you have a flawed system that cannot be recovered.
Yeah, the only way a group of five team ever gets in is it has to be the perfect storm where, you know, they have to beat this team and play this team, and like you have to have that schedule, which is set up a decade in advance, where I think the team we're going to see tonight, BYU, they had five Power Five teams on their schedule coming into the year. A team like that goes undefeated, you beat those teams, great. But that's going to be so few and far between, and a group of five team that has to be perfect, like, it's not going to happen that often. So, yes, on paper, they're able to say, oh, no, no, they have a shot. They have a legit shot, same as everyone else. But I agree. There's no point. I personally don't want to see it go to eight, and I think that's the only way we get a group of five in, but there's no point for the group of five to be part of this anymore.
I'm all for it going to eight. Hell, let's throw out 16 teams in this. And oh, but they're college kids, and they have school, and they need to be ready for finals. We just played an entire college football season in a raging, deadly pandemic. You actually think that I'm going to buy that you care about the well-being of the student-athlete and their performance in the classroom when we were hell-bent pounding our fist on the table to get a college football season, and in some conferences, only six games? Get out of here.
See, that's not why I agree. Like, we know that they don't care about the actual college athletes, the student-athletes. Like, but to me, like, my favorite part about college football is how important every Saturday is. I feel like if we expand to eight, all of a sudden they lose a little bit meaning on Saturday. Because you don't have to be perfect. You don't have to lose only one game, because you can still lose a couple games and still get in the mix on things.
But there is no, outside of the SEC, the ACC, and some years, potentially, the Big 12, there's no reward for winning your conference championship.
Sure.
Let's take FAU, for example. I'm the voice of Florida Atlantic, you, longtime the executive producer of FAU football. In 2017, ran the table. Not even one singular close game in Conference USA. Won the Conference USA championship, and they went to the Boca Raton Bowl. And that was great, but there's never any discussion about them possibly getting a chance to play for a national championship. It's what drives me crazy about college basketball, where you can win the regular season championship, which is fundamentally more difficult than getting hot for four or five games in March and winning your conference tournament. But it's the conference tournament that gives you the bid into the NCAA tournament, as opposed to the regular season championship, which only clinches you a berth to the NIT. It's the same thing with college football, but even less so. The group of five is playing for a chance to play on New Year's Day. Right. That's the ceiling for the group of five, meaning that the BCS was just as good of a gauge of who should be playing for a title on its face than this four-team college football playoff, except that you're making more money with two extra games in the college football playoff.
The only solution I see is almost not even expanding the playoffs, but having that opportunity down the line to like have some late season schedule changes, to have, you know, a Coastal Carolina, if they're in the mix this year, let them play a middle of the pack SEC team in November and let them say, okay, hey, we have that win on our resume right now. Because that's the other thing, like with the SEC, they're all, you know, I feel like the entire conference is in the preseason top 25. They're not all deserving of it because the SEC, they get in there. So all of a sudden, you have an Auburn who's ranked number 8 to start the year. Someone beats them the first 3 weeks, like, oh, well, they beat number 8 Auburn. It's like, yeah, but that's a 2-10 team. So you just need ways to adjust the schedule, which is never going to happen because to the Power 5, they don't care. Like, they don't care if the Group of 5 ever gets in. They're not losing anything out of this.
Division 2 has figured out a playoff. Division 3 has figured out a playoff. The only portion of college football, FCS has figured out a playoff. The only portion of college football that has not figured it out is the FBS. And they continue to make themselves look bad at trotting out the same teams and the same stories and the same coaches every single year without giving a viable shot to anyone else other than a collection of about 9 or 10 teams a chance at winning a championship. Should we just kill off the four-team college football playoff? 888-760-3776. 888-760-ESPN. He's Brian McLovin-Rowitz. I'm Ken Lavica. We're at FAU Stadium overlooking Howard Schnellenberger Field in advance of tonight's roofclaim.com Boca Raton Bowl. It's going to be a big one, and if you don't believe me, just take it from Yahoo, take it from ESPN, who have both ranked this game, BYU and UCF, as the most compelling bowl matchup outside of the New Year's Six. So I'm just some dude. McLovin's just a guy. We're hanging out talking college football. People who write about this for a living, they're just as excited about this as we are. 888-760-3776. 888-760-ESPN. Tom DeAngelo of the Palm Beach Post. He will join us right around 2:30 Eastern time to talk about the Heisman race. I am very high on Florida's Kyle Trask. I was absolutely stunned at how good he was and that Florida offense was this year. But when we come back, we're going to take a look at Kyle Trask's head coach. Now, seriously, what in the hell is wrong with Dan Mullen? Talking college football on ESPN 106.3. The college football hits just keep on coming here in 2020. It's not enough that we had four bowl games completely canceled just 2 days ago, including the Independence Bowl, because of program opt-outs. And understandably so, by the way. These players haven't seen their families in months and months and months. If they don't want to play, especially in a raging pandemic, then so be it. But that also left a 9-2 Army team without a bowl game because they were slated contractually to play in the Independence Bowl, and suddenly they had no game at all. Finally, because it took Tennessee's COVID issues to open up a spot in the Liberty Bowl against West Virginia, Army got in. But now, Brett McMurphy of Stadium is reporting that the Gasparilla Bowl in Tampa is likely a no-go, canceled, off, finished, because South Carolina has COVID problems. By the way, South Carolina, a 2-8 team that was going to play in a bowl game over 9-2 Army. Also, that Gasparilla Bowl happens to be where Conference USA champion UAB was supposed to play. So Conference USA could have its champion without a bowl game because of COVID problems with South Carolina.
And on that bowl, Chris Vanini of The Athletic tweeted, South Carolina went 2-8, accepted a bowl bid. Their interim coach said the players got no vote on the matter, unlike other schools who voted on it. So that's good.
Oh, this 2020 season, what an absolute disaster. 888-760-3776, 888-760-ESPN. Should the four-team college football playoff be killed off when we had a championship Saturday that meant nothing? We went in with Alabama, Clemson, Ohio State, Notre Dame as the four teams in the top four, and we left the day with Alabama, Clemson, Ohio State, and Notre Dame as the four teams that will be playing for a national championship. We'll have Tom DeAngelo, Palm Beach Post, talking some Heisman in about 10 minutes time. But Dan Mullen has had one hell of a year, the head coach of the Florida Gators. Today, the NCAA announces that Dan Mullen is having a one-year show cause penalty slapped on him for recruiting violations. In fact, in January, he's going to have to sit out a week or a week and a half of recruiting. No calls, no visits, no nothing, because he's in trouble. He has committed violations, and it is the perfect exclamation point to the complete unhinged year, not even full year, but last 5 months that Dan Mullen has had. I'm going to list off some of his greatest hits in 2020, and McLovin, you fill in the holes in case I miss something, but the Dan Mullen crazy parade started after the road loss at Texas A&M, where Dan Mullen went on this bizarre rant because he thought that let's be clear, not socially distanced, reduced crowd in College Station made the difference in that game, not the fact that Florida couldn't play any semblance of defense, not only that Saturday, but any Saturday throughout the course of the college football season. And he basically pressured the Florida administration by saying, it's time to pack the swamp. This, as thousands of people per day in the state of Florida are becoming infected by COVID. We were just starting this latest spike that is absolutely debilitating the country and this state of Florida. But he pressured specifically the administration of Florida, saying, we need to pack the swamp next week. Needless to say, Florida did not pack the swamp. Yeah. Fast forward a couple of weeks later, Dan Mullen incites a riot at midfield against Mizzou. And gets penalized for that. He identified as one of the causes of a big all-out brawl against Mizzou. That was just leading in to Dan Mullen and what potentially ends up being his piece de resistance this season. And it's the LSU game, otherwise known as the Shoe Game. Otherwise known as the Marco Wilson game. So immediately after the game, instead of taking responsibility for an ill-advised timeout or once again pinpointing a defense that was really unable to get the job done at key moments and really that team playing around with LSU and keeping them in the game, Dan Mullen says, well, we should be considered for the playoff because it seems like you get rewarded for playing less games this season. Just a total, I'm not going to accept any sort of responsibility, woe is me type of approach to take from a guy like Dan Mullen. And then goes on to defend Marco Wilson by saying he thought that the shoe throw 20 yards down the field was just part of a celebratory motion that Marco Wilson was making. So all of those things then added on to today, the inevitable NCAA punishment, the show cause slapped on Dan Mullen for recruiting violations, and I don't think that there has been a more unhinged, a more out of control, a more what in God's name is going on with this guy performance from any college football coach this season.
But don't forget also, after he asked to pack the swamp, he and the team had a COVID outbreak and missed a couple weeks.
But the thank you for filling in that hole. That is a significant part of the context.
The weird thing is, like, when you look at the state of Florida, like, he is by far the best coach in this state. Florida is by far the best team in the state. Better than Miami, better than UCF. Like, they are the top of the class. So why is he acting like this? Because he's acting like a coach that needs the attention, that needs to get his program
some
attention.
It's like desperate.
Yeah, but like his team, if they took care of business on Saturday, there's a good chance they were in the SEC title game. If they don't lose to LSU, there's a chance they're in the playoff. But like, why is he doing this stuff?
You know, he's trying to grab headlines, and it's almost as if he is trying to follow the Lane Kiffin blueprint of throwing anything out there and seeing what sticks and then turning it into a bit.
Right.
Now, if you're Lane Kiffin, you had to do that when you came to Florida Atlantic because you needed any sort of attention. And Lane Kiffin is obviously doing it in the SEC to get attention onto a stale program at Ole Miss. And it has worked to this point. But the status of the Ole Miss program is not the same as the status of the Florida program.
Right.
Dan Mullen has largely, for the past couple of seasons, succeeded by recruiting well to Gainesville and coaching well in Gainesville and building that team up into a squad that is rightfully considered a top-tier team in college football. But for some reason, and I don't know if it's the pandemic, and I don't know if it's because the year has just been especially hard on him, but he's been erratic. Like, almost to a point where you say to yourself, has someone at Florida tried to get him some help? Like this, and I'm not trying to make a joke out of this, but does Dan Mullen need to see somebody? Because this is not normal behavior from what we thought Dan Mullen to be, and certainly not normal behavior from, I think, someone that could be a successful college football coach. Like, he has gone off the rails, and it's not just he's derailed. The train has found a way to keep rolling into a residential right. neighborhood and then explode and take casualties. Like, we have a problem with Dan Mullen. It's just compounded, and this might be the most serious. Forget the suggesting a potential COVID hotspot outbreak by packing the swamp, and then your team ends up getting COVID right. and missing games. Forget the woe is me after you were vastly outcoached by Ed Orgeron. Oh, well, we deserve to get in the playoff because it seems like you get rewarded for playing less games this season. Forget all that. This is serious now, and Florida's going to have to really act on what happened today and the punishment handed down today.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, it's one thing when you're trying to get this attention and, like, you're not getting in trouble. But to get the attention and now get in trouble and have a show cause, which can lead to other things down the line, then it becomes an issue, because all of a sudden the SEC, there's, you know, maybe three scholarships you're not able to offer in the next class, and that's the difference between you and Bama. You've already seen that Bama is better than you. Yes, Florida hung around in that game. Their offense is really good. But next year when you're losing Trask, when you're losing Pitts, who knows if the offense is going to be as elite as they were this year. So that's the stuff that the administration might be like, whoa, 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 now we need to slow down. Like, the COVID stuff they'll deal with, the attention stuff they'll deal with, but, like, we can't be losing scholarships and things like that. We can't be losing any ground on the recruiting trail.
Once you start hearing terms like show cause for any university, it starts getting really serious, and especially when that show cause is attached to your head football coach in the SEC. McLovin mentioned Kyle Trask. He's a Heisman candidate. I think he has a legitimate chance to win the Heisman, but what about Mac Jones at Alabama? Maybe there's a dark horse. We'll talk about it with a Heisman voter, Tom DeAngelo of the Palm Beach Post. He'll join McLovin and I next. We're talking college football until 3 from FAU Stadium, roofclaim.com, Boca Raton Bowl tonight, BYU and UCF on ESPN 106.3. Less than 4.5 hours away from kickoff, roofclaim.com, Boca Raton Bowl, BYU, UCF, 7 o'clock right here at FAU Stadium. McLovin and I are on the 6th floor overlooking Howard Schnellenberger Field. The game tonight on ESPN and right here on ESPN 106.3. Get the latest up-to-date information at BocaRatonBowl.com. And all bowl coverage today driven by Tire Kingdom. Also brought to you by RoofClaim.com, ADT, BB&T, Baptist Health Orthopedic and Sports Medicine, Citrus Distillers, Chick-fil-A, Fast Signs, Florida Blue, Humana, Office Depot, PGA Tour Superstore, Fifth Third Bank, Solid Waste Authority, Toshiba, and Tire Kingdom. We've been talking college football playoff, the lack of drama, the lack of any sort of viable storyline, because teams that you actually thought might be able to get in and mix it up a bit, they were completely shut out and always were. It was predetermined, predestined to be that way, and that is why the 4-team playoff needs to go. Also, Dan Mullen, I don't quite understand what is wrong with him. I have no background in any sort of mental health or anything along those lines, but something is wrong with Dan Mullen, because it has been a weird, erratic last 5 months for the Florida head football coach. Possibly able to shed some light, and certainly someone that we can pick his brain when it comes to Heisman voting, is Tom DeAngelo of the Palm Beach Post, and he joins us here on ESPN 106.3. Tommy D, thank you for hanging out with us for a couple of minutes. I'll just start with this. I'm a big Kyle Trask fan, and what are the odds that he can win the Heisman Trophy?
None.
Wow. Zero. Thank you, Tommy D.
Besides that, I hope you keep my seat warm. No, don't keep my seat warm. I don't want to have to sanitize it, but just make sure nobody is in my seat when I get there in a few hours. No, number one, I'm a Heisman Trophy voter. I voted for Trevor Lawrence. Trevor Lawrence is the best player in the country. I don't care about the stats. Trevor Lawrence doesn't play most of the fourth quarters. If Trevor Lawrence was the quarterback at Alabama or Florida, his numbers would be through the roof also. Mm-hmm. He is the best player in college football. It's not because he's going to be the number one pick. He is the best player, most outstanding, most deserving, whatever label you want to put on how you look at the Heisman Trophy. He's the guy, and I say that, and I'm going to say this. He's probably not going to win it, because people are going to look at the numbers, and they're going to look at Mac Jones, and they're going to look at what he did against Alabama. Now, I had Mac Jones number two, and then I had Kyle Trask number three. And
okay.
And I will admit that's a bias towards quarterbacks, because if you get it's hard that, you know, DeVonta Smith needed another few weeks. He needed a bigger game against Florida. You know, he needed another couple of games where he did what he did against who did they play, Mississippi or whoever they played that game, the last game, I can't remember, Tennessee?
Yeah.
I don't know. Whoever they played the last game of the year, that when he had a punt return for touchdown, he's been catching double-digit balls and 100 to 200 yards a game. You need a lot more than that, a lot more of those to win the Heisman Trophy or to be up there seriously considered as a wide receiver. That's just the way the trophy goes. So in my view, it's the Trevor Lawrence is the best player in the country, should win it, and I think Mac Jones is going to win it, and I think Kyle Trask is going to finish third. That's where I have him.
Tommy, do we always hear about teammates sort of taking votes from each other, and this year you have Florida with two guys, Bama possibly with three. Is that a real thing?
I don't think in this case, Brian. I think, I don't think Kyle Pitts is going to get a lot of votes. I mean, it's just he's a nice story, and when you want to get away from the quarterbacks, if you had a conversation of just knocking all the quarterbacks out of there, he would be top three, probably three, four, five, somewhere in there. So I don't think someone's going to vote. If they're gonna put Kyle Pitts in the ballot, they're probably gonna put Kyle Trask ahead of him. And the same thing with Smith, and it's probably a little bit closer with Smith and Mac Jones. But I would feel the same way that if I felt that DeVonta Smith was a candidate, I'd probably have him, you know, one spot behind Mac Jones. But in this case, you can vote for two guys from one team. There's no rule against that. So I don't know if that means they take. That doesn't mean they're really taking a vote away from each other. So I'm not sure if that's going to happen in this case, but I just think you're going to see a really big gap between number two and number three.
Palm Beach County Sports Hall of Famer Tom DeAngelo joining us here on ESPN 106.3, and he pays me $5 every time I introduce him as such, and he joins us here talking college football until 3 from roofclaim.com Boca Raton Bowl. So as you usually do, Tommy D, just Venmo me that cash, please. Thank you.
I think people forgot. That was a long time ago, I do appreciate you keeping that up.
Absolutely.
There. I had hair.
It is my pleasure.
I had hair in that ceremony, I think. Well, no, it wasn't that long ago. But that was quite a while ago. Great memories. And just to just jump off a track on this a little bit, I truly hope that we can at least soon, if not this year, have another ceremony like they've been having, because those are wonderful, wonderful nights for the people inducted into the Hall of Fame. But go ahead. I digress.
Absolutely. No, that is a point well made. You mentioned quarterbacks and how quarterback heavy the Heisman vote is, but I do think now that's the nature of football, period. The NFL MVP is now almost always a quarterback. It's why it's notable that Derrick Henry is in the conversation. When's the last time you actually voted a non-quarterback at the top of your Heisman voting ballot?
I don't remember, because I can't remember who I voted for, you know, 43 years ago. Never mind. I'm not even sure when I first started getting a vote. I haven't had a vote that long. For whatever reason, they were asking me, and I never got back to them, and I finally did it maybe 5-6 years ago. And really, and like you said, it's been, you know, when is the last time a non-quarterback won a Heisman? I don't have a list in front of me. It had to be a running back, one of those Alabama running backs probably, but it's been
probably
a while. And I know, so going back, I mean, since Tebow and a few years after that, Jameis Winston, and then coming all these guys recently from Oklahoma, I guess if you're an Oklahoma quarterback, you're always in the running. Like you said, the guy, especially in college, I mean, obviously we all know the quarterback at both levels touches the ball in every snap. The only player who does that. In college, though, the quarterback so often now, not just the passing game, the RPO game, quarterbacks are just, they're running with the ball a lot more. They're looking for quarterbacks who can do that, who can affect games and impact games with his legs. And you're seeing that even with, you know, people think, you look at Trevor Lawrence, you say he's going to be great in the NFL because he's a big guy. He's 6'5". He's got a great arm. He can stand in the pocket. Trevor Lawrence's best play last year was what, the 65-yard run against Ohio State that probably won that game for them. You know, so he's, I mean, even that guy who is considered a pocket pro style quarterback is going to impact game with his legs. So, so that the way this whole thing has changed, the way this game has changed, especially on the college level, that's number one. And then you go to the NFL. When did you have guys like Lamar Jackson as quarterbacks? I mean, it's been a long time. So even now, you're getting those guys in the NFL who are doing the same thing. So yes, Lamar Jackson is going to be there every year. Patrick Mahomes, the way he can change a game and impact the game with his legs. So they're not just winning MVPs like Tom Brady and Peyton Manning won them because of their arm. They're also now, even those guys are kind of becoming obsolete because they're also, you know, impacting games so much with their legs.
And speaking of running backs, only two running backs have won. It's only been a non-quarterback two of the last 12 years to win the Heisman. Mm-hmm. Ingram in 09, Derrick Henry in 2015. Henry? So the point stands that it is a quarterback award. Tom DeAngelo, Palm Beach Post with us here on ESPN 106.3.
Tommy D, another thing, you vote on the AP Top 25. How frustrating was that this year when teams are playing different amount of games, teams aren't playing, teams are taking a month off?
Hard.
Like, what was that like?
It was hard. It was the hardest year. Just from what you said, I mean, how do you evaluate? What do you do? Now, it was very strange because we had the option as soon as the Big Ten said they were playing again. They said they were playing, but they weren't playing for a month. So people were piling up games, and no one in the Big Ten was playing. So at 0-0, where were you putting on? I had Ohio State in there, but I am in the top four. You know, as soon as they won a game, okay, you look at them. They were what you thought they were, at least then. I think I had them at 3 or 4 the entire season, and some people didn't even include them. It was very skewed. It was a strange poll because it really, it was almost the first month of the season. It was moot because there was a whole group of guys who didn't even include any of the Pac-12 and Big Ten in their rankings, and then there was a bunch of people who did. So Ohio State was sitting there around 9 or 10 because they were 2 or 3 in a bunch of guys' polls, and they weren't even ranked in another poll, a bunch of, you know, in 9 or 10 polls. So it was just a very weird year. But once they got started, I mean, it was difficult. You know, you're looking forward to a game being played. I think it was, you know, there were several games, even the Coastals and Louisiana's and Liberties. I think there's a Louisiana Coastal game. They're playing each other in a bowl, I believe. I think it was canceled. You're looking for these games to be played. Tulsa, Cincinnati. Okay, I could find out which, you know, group of five, is Tulsa that good? Canceled. You know, so it was very difficult. And, you just had, and you know what? And things were all over the board, and I cannot blame anyone. I cannot blame anyone if they said, look, I haven't seen enough Ohio State, or I don't give Ohio State credit for 6 games as much as I give Texas A&M credit for 9 or 10 or Notre Dame for 11. I get it. I had them 4. I had them 3. I can't get the end. I had a 4 and then 3 when Texas A&M 4, actually. I had Notre Dame 5th. But I felt that still there were, as we did see him 6 games, in those 6 games, I felt they're one of the top 4 teams, but I don't criticize anybody who maybe had him 6th. You know, you can go down that road with a team having played nearly half as many games as other teams that were ranked behind them.
Well, that means Dabo Swinney's still in good standing with you because he has Ohio State ranked 11th in his last coaches poll. Yeah, you know, I know. Those three words, when it comes to Dabo and me, that pretty much sums it up. The college football playoff, and Tommy D, you and I have known each other for a long time. You know I'm group of five through and through, especially with my work with FAU. This year has killed the four-team college football playoff for me. I want nothing to do with it any longer, and I was a big proponent of it. How do you view the four-team college football playoff now?
I'm doing a column tomorrow that I've always said I'm a proponent for an 18, and I have been for years. But man, did they blow it this year, because this is the perfect year to do it. Well, number one, a group of five is never going to get into the 14 playoffs. Never going to. I mean, it has to be I sit there and I say it would have to be a crazy year. Well, you're never going to get a crazier year than this year, and they didn't get close. Who was it? Number 8, and they kept dropping. Cincinnati didn't play, and they dropped. I mean, if Cincinnati doesn't play another game, they're going to be out of the top 20. I mean, that's the way this team went for the rest last month. This would have been, I mean, how great would a playoff have been with, okay, Alabama would have played Cincinnati, probably a blowout, but you know what? Alabama's going to blow out Notre Dame anyway. So you're going to get one blowout either way. But Clemson, Florida, although I don't agree Florida, you know, Florida loses two games and drops one spot. Cincinnati does not play and drops two, but anyway. But you would have Clemson, Florida, Ohio State, Oklahoma, Notre Dame, Texas A&M. I mean, how great would those first round games have been? That would have been awesome. This is the year, if any year, and I don't want to hear any more two things. I don't want to hear that, oh, you know, we'd like to play them. We can't fit them in our schedule, so we got to play them in 38. Yeah, I don't want to hear that. We saw games being put together in 48 hours this year, and I don't want to hear that, well, we don't have time for the, you know, we can't make the change. Our games are set, the playoff set. No, we saw 3 days ago, we saw a game move from Pasadena to Arlington, Texas. So I don't hear any of that. They could have very easily found two more spots, played one of them at the Orange Bowl, because then you play in the semifinal. Maybe that would have been fair. Your finals at the Orange Bowl this year, so you add the Peach Bowl and you add the Fiesta Bowl, and you would have had Arlington and you would have had the Sugar Bowl. There's your four semifinals. Period. It's so simple. It would have been easy. And then if you have to move the final back a week, you move it back a week. What is the difference? You know, it doesn't matter if it's January 7th or 14th or 11th or 18th. You move it back to your next Monday. You just figure out. The only logistical thing is trying to figure out how to work the second round games. The first round games, you know, would all have been around New Year's. How great a New Year's Day and New Year's Eve or the day after New Year's to have those four semifinal games. And then the week after, you'd have a little bit of an issue with two games because NFL playoffs, you play them on a Saturday. You know, you kind of work around the NFL playoffs. But you get it done. If you got to do one Friday night, you do it. You know, you play the final on Monday night, so why can't you play your semifinals on Friday nights? It would have been simple. But no, you know, if it's something they don't want to do, they're going to, you know, we can't do that in such short notice. But if it's something they have to do, boy, that could be done in 10 minutes.
Yep,
and that's the way we've seen it, you know. And, God, that would have been, I looked at these, and I didn't even think about it till like a day after, because I was just focused on Sunday and all the bowls and everything. And then I kind of looked at it and said, let me see, what would the matchups have been? I said, are you kidding me? We would have had three great games. Ohio State and Oklahoma. Notre Dame and A&M, you know, and that in Florida and Clemson, that would have been awesome. So, but no, we don't get that. We got Alabama blowing out Notre Dame, and I think Clemson. And thanks to Dabo, we might get a game with Ohio State now, because if Ohio State doesn't want to go in there and just stick it to him, then they didn't belong there. So thanks to him, we may not get two blowouts now in the semifinals, but it could have been it just could have been so much better.
Tom D'Angelo, Palm Beach Post. Tommy D, thank you so much for hanging out with us for a little bit, and we'll see you later on tonight, okay?
I appreciate it, guys. I'll say hello from a distance.
All right, Tom D'Angelo, we socially distanced, and he joined us here on ESPN 106.3 from the roofclaim.com Boca Raton Bowl. He's Brian McLovin-Rowitz. I'm Ken LaVica. We'll come back. More college football talk leading you into Josh Cohen of the home team at 3 on ESPN 106.3. 7 o'clock kickoff tonight, FAU Stadium. That's where Brian McLovin-Rowitz and myself, Ken LaVica, are. Roofclaim.com, Boca Raton Bowl, number 16, BYU, taking on UCF in the premier bowl matchup prior to the New Year's Six, and it'll be here on ESPN 106.3 and on the worldwide leader on television, ESPN. Cannot wait for this one. We've had some big-time matchups in this game, whether it is Marshall and Northern Illinois, whether it is FAU and SMU a season ago. We have had several of these games as the only matchup between two conference champions before the college football playoff. But this year feels like the single best matchup because both these teams are going to put a ton of points on the board. It's going to be the first true shootout that we've had in this game.
Yeah, we got a ranked team in BYU, a team in UCF that was ranked most of the year that could very easily finish the year ranked. Like, these are two teams that really, like, winning this game would mean a lot to them. And then the quarterbacks. Like, Zach Wilson's playing on Sundays next year. So it's going to be pretty cool to see him on this field tonight.
I saw an awful lot of Dylan Gabriel against FAU here last year, and that hurt a lot because he passed the ball all over the place and did a lot of things with his arm, and they scored a lot of points, and FAU did not. So I'm fairly familiar with Dylan Gabriel. FAU fans are as well. He has performed well. The only other time he has played here at FAU Stadium. But again, it's a 7 o'clock kickoff here on ESPN 106.3 and on ESPN. That'll be a wrap for us here. For Brian McLovin Horowitz, I'm Ken Lavicka. I want to thank Tom DeAngelo of the Palm Beach Post and Chris Coquel back in the ESPN West Palm Phillips Point Studios in West Palm Beach. Josh Cohen and the home team up next right here on ESPN 106.3.